All right, I can hear myself, Gabe.
I can hear me, yeah.
Hey, that's great.
Now we're flying by the seat of our pants. We didn't even do a sound check ahead of time. I think we're getting
cocky.
Yeah.
So it's day three, I guess, technically, of VMworld 2011 at the Sands Expo Hall in Las Vegas.
Yeah, our second full day.
Yeah. And so we have today, I guess the main point of our show today is we do have Warren Ponder, who will be joining us. Warren is a VMware employee. He's basically the guy who owns PC over IP for VMware.
And Vue, it sounds like. Or is it just PC over IP? Because I went and asked somebody to get a VMware Vue 5 demo on tape, and they said, no, we have to wait for Warren.
Maybe Warren has been expanded some. Maybe Warren has just been press trained.
Oh, that could be.
Which is so funny because, like,
that's a real thing.
I know, but I love the fact that we go up to these vendors' booths and we're like, you know, like talking to them and they're talking to people and everything, and we got a camera with us or whatever. And then as soon as, you know, we say, hey, can we do an interview on camera? They're like, oh, no, I don't want to be on camera. Like, right. I'm not press trained. I'm like, wait a second. You were just talking like 50 million actual customers a second ago.
Yeah.
So what is it that you can say to them that you are like don't have the guts to say on camera?
But if they say press train, they actually mean it. And the other ones are just, oh, no, I don't want to be on camera. Those guys just don't want to be on camera.
It's just yeah, that's true. So maybe Warren is just their press trained person. But Warren will to talk to about the bandwidth improvements in PC over IP. And
he should be here any time now. I'm sure he's just trying to find our booth.
But we have a lot of, going back, like we said in the video yesterday, you know, the show floor is so huge. And in the comments, you know, someone asked, what's the general feel on the show floor in regards to the new licensing model with V5.
I have not heard a single thing about it.
I tell you what, though, because it's from a desktop standpoint, I guess we have to look at that, the desktop licensing separate from regular vSphere licensing. From the desktop standpoint, it doesn't matter because obviously Vue doesn't change. And then now that there is that vSphere for desktops license, I mean, that cost-wise, I think the vSphere for desktops license is a very fair license. It's a good price and it's fine.
But it's especially fair because it takes care of everybody, not just Vue customers.
It
works for anybody that's using vSphere.
Yeah, but so now, granted, while we don't follow server virtualization, you know, we're here. We hear things. I haven't heard anyone complaining about the licensing costs.
No.
So I don't know if that's just like a storm that blew over, or if.
And we don't. I mean, we don't talk to customers all that often, so maybe there's something we're missing there.
But it could have been. You know, we talked about that. Like when we did the article on the licensing, we talked about how many people were in that that thread on VMware.com complaining about it. But maybe this was like that was everyone on the planet. Yeah. Like there was only 200 people, you know, on the whole planet who didn't care about that. let's talk about a couple of vendors we saw. You know, yesterday I know we spent a lot of time talking to VMware, and once Warren gets here, we'll talk about VMware some more. But there are some other vendors here that we've seen that we can talk to. Gabe, one thing I want to ask you is I saw that you posted a video, or I guess Justin posted the video of you talking to Citrix, mm-hmm. because Citrix just announced Zen Desktop 5.5.
Right.
And that was announced, I guess, last week in the sort of...
Last Thursday. And
hey, we have news, too.
Oh, was VMworld next week?
did not realize that.
And they're here. They're showing it off. They're not, they're not trumping it up too much. They're being neighborly.
Well, let me ask you. So let's say, for example, that I don't know anything about Zen Desktop 5.5. Like, let's say, hypothetically, I haven't looked at it at all and didn't even watch your video or read anything about it. Although there's, we post an article. Bridget Botello wrote a piece on it for Search Virtual Desktop. And I know there's the video you did, but so give me the rundown. What's new in Zen Desktop 5.5?
The most important thing I feel like, at least from a nerd standpoint, is that the RingCube stuff has already been adapted and included in tech preview form into Zen Desktop 5.5. They've done a find and replace on there, right? Mm-hmm. So they've replaced RingCube with Citrix. It's probably the same font. they just replaced
so
the text.
It's called Citrix.
Personal vDisk. And it, like I said, it's just in tech preview mode. It's not recommended for production. But they are. They did such a quick turnaround on that. I mean, Christ, Caviza is still called Caviza. but RingCube, they turned it around in 3 weeks or something. So.
Well, I guess that makes more sense because RingCube actually has to add on to Zen Desktop. Like, you can't use it by itself.
Right.
Whereas Caviza is
a standalone
not
separate
sold
product
to Zen Desktop customers. Yeah.
They've made a lot of improvements to HDX as well, and those are the things that are actually being realized right now in production. some changes to the way the media streaming and stuff, or the media remoting and things are handled. Before, you used to be able to say it, redirection is still there, and redirection has been enhanced, but the remoting stuff is interesting to me because when the video is rendered server-side and sent down to the client, instead of actually tweaking and setting the compression settings manually for everybody, now it's done automatically. So based on the connection type, it decides whether or not to compress it, and it can prioritize audio over video to make sure that video still is useful for all the people.
So now there's some things missing. It says, you know, there's still no Mac. There's new receivers.
Yeah, so there's new receivers for all these new HDX capabilities, and it's just funny because they announced that, oh, everybody's going to get a new receiver, but right now it's only Windows. And I think there might be one other receiver that's out right now. I can't remember off the top of my head. Mac, Android, all these guys, we still have to wait for those. So how long have we been waiting for an updated Mac client now? I mean, yeah. I've had a Mac for 3 years.
So Gabe, as you were talking about Citrix Zen Desktop, we were just joined by a rather famous guy who threw on a headset. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Vittorio Arengo. I run product strategy and marketing and product management for the UC products at VMware.
All right, Mr. Vittorio, and you also are the headliner of the VMware band, right? Called
Elastic Sky.
Elastic Sky, right?
You know what Elastic Sky stands for, right?
I do not.
They hired years ago a company to figure out the name for ESX, and they came up with Elastic Sky.
Yes.
Diane Green hated it, and so they went with ESX, Elastic Sky, and X. I don't know.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And X to make it sound cool.
So that's that's trivia. So that is absolutely trivia we have now. That is, you know, what does ESX stand for?
There you go.
Incidentally, so before we jump into talking with you, how much time do you have right now?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. All right, cool. So you run product management for the VMware Vue products, or is it the whole end user computing?
It's I have influence across all of them, but.
And so now, I told you yesterday, or I tweeted yesterday, you, in a demo, you showed all the new stuff, the Horizon, Horizon Mobile, Horizon App Manager, you know, Thin App, all that kind of stuff integrated. And so it feels like it looks like a pretty good story that VMware has.
Yeah, so we are switching gears. We see the world moving beyond Windows, you know, duh.
What was it? Duh. You say duh, but duh stands for something, right?
Duh was the acronym, right?
Devices, universal access, and high expectation, duh. By the way, I write my own material. So we have been thinking about this really hard, and we love Vue. Vue allows us to take the desktop, deliver the service for a number of use cases where it makes sense. But we are, over the last 12 months, really embraced the new. Noah Wasmer has been putting out this vision for us over the last 2 years, really. And we now, you know, embraced it and say, let's accelerate, let's help customers break free of the Windows treadmill and move over there.
Now, do you think the customers are ready to break free of the Windows treadmill today?
They want to. They're all already, right? Because there's so much inertia there, right? You have hundreds of thousands of people that know how to perpetrate.
Yeah, it's like slowing down a freight train. You have to, it takes a while.
Yeah, so they have a lot of customers that are still perpetrating the Windows legacy. Our competitors, that's what they do. And we're switching gears going to where customers want to be. This morning I met with a bank, 16,000 people. And they're saying, look, we're skipping Windows 7 and just so that we can, you know, are we doing Windows 7 just so that we can get to Windows 8? So they want to skip the whole step and go there.
So what does that mean? Are they skipping Windows 8 also? Like Windows XP will be the last Windows they use?
That's their goal. They understand that they may not be able to do it, but they want to do it. And those are the customers that we're listening to.
So what happens, because I feel like a lot of customers out there, you know, so that's rare. That's awesome, I think, for that bank, right? But it's probably rare that customers can sort of skip Windows 7. Most customers are focused on getting to Windows 7 right now. Yeah. Are they thinking about desktop virtualization? Are they thinking about doing VDI type stuff now?
For certain use cases, absolutely. You know, and that's why over the last 12 months we saw customers coming back from the pilots and the first deployments to do the 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 deployments. We just closed the largest deal ever for VDI.
What is that largest deal ever? Are you able to disclose the size or anything about it?
It's way north of 100,000 seats, and this is a Vue. It's not ThinApp. It's none of that stuff.
It's pure VMware Vue.
And we're going to talk and unveil the name later on because it's a really great business transformation. So you had a blog few weeks ago, which is a little politically incorrect for me to talk about it, but you were wondering, are people doing VDI? And the answer is, for the use cases of VDI show the ROI, they're absolutely doing it.
So it is, you mentioned ROI, so are people doing VDI for sort of cost reasons and management reasons, or are they doing VDI because they have security or they've got similar?
But that you cannot split the two apart. Security is part of the ROI. Delivering a better, a more secure environment gives them better ROI for highly secure environment. And so those are, and the other thing that we're doing, and that's the reason why sometimes we get dinged because we don't run and trying to fill somebody else's architecture. Oh, why don't you do this, Citrix just bought this company. What are you doing for that? Look, if you keep piling stuff on top of the Windows.
There's no FCC here. You can say crap or whatever.
If you keep piling stuff on top of the Windows container, how are you going to break free of that? Do you really believe that taking the Windows container, virtualizing it, slapping 7 management consoles on top of it will make it easier to manage? If you truly believe that, then our competitor has a great solution for that.
So what do you do for this, for the rank and file IT pro who's maybe a desktop admin? I mean, a lot of us, myself included, watched the keynote yesterday. I thought it was really awesome. Like, your demo was great in the way you showed all the stuff working together. But then I come back to my company. Look at me internally at TechTarget even. You know, if I go to IT people at TechTarget, they're like, you know what, man? We just got to get Windows 7 out there. We got desktops. I don't have time to be worrying about
or expertise. Yeah.
Okay. Look, we get it, and we are not naive about it. Windows and the PCs are going to be there forever. But it's like saying in 95, and I actually was one of those guys, that people were saying, one day we'll run all our applications through the browser. I was like, really? And he got, what are you talking about? What about my user interface? What about my client server? What about my database? What is it going to be? Like 5 years later, 80% of the applications run there. So at some point, you got to have to, like, the sea of change is so strong that you have to get on top of that train of being run over.
And so do you know yet enough, or is it too early, about kind of where VMware is going with Horizon in terms of packaging and how customers are going to be able to get that? What I mean is, like, the Horizon Mobile, the Horizon App Manager, Vue, is this all integrated where they buy something, or these separate components?
So, as you know, we take time to really integrate these things, which sometimes slows us down, but is the right thing to do for the customers. We don't just slap a bunch of bits on a CD and ship. That's not what we did with the RTL. We got dinged for that, but I'm absolutely convinced it was the right thing to do for our customers. So the way we see the future for our product is Horizon becomes the universal broker that sits in the middle. And it has a bunch of plugins to talk to backends. Vue, the application catalog, and data. So eventually everything management-wise will converge into Horizon. And we'll get there in step.
I know it's hard to make predictions about availability, but the stuff we saw, is this stuff coming out in the next few months from VMware, this is later this year, this is long-term multi-year vision?
Yeah. This is the way to think about Octopus and AppBlast, which Warren is going to talk about in more details. Think about what we did last year with Horizon, right? We said, it's a new project, very excited about it. We ship it in May, and now we are in September, and we have added 150 features to it since we shipped. So that's a good frame of reference to think about this new project.
And so how do you leave it? Because I know you've got to run, but so if people, what's the takeaway? So again, I'm an IT pro, working on desktops, I'm thinking about Windows 7. Now I hear VMware's talking about new stuff for Vue and bandwidth improvements and Persona and Horizon and AppBlast and Octopus and all this kind of stuff. If I'm an admin, what do I need to think about as I look at VMware and look at all the news out of VMworld, what should I focus on?
Well, if people are clearly making a strategic investment in VMware as a platform, right? And the message to the IT administrator and the desktop administrator is like, we understand your pain, we understand where we want to get to, so we want to help you deliver your legacy as a service, but then really give you the tools to move out of that the Windows trap into this new, very heterogeneous world. And we want to make management, we want to build it in, not being an afterthought, and that's where Horizon comes in.
Last question. I've heard that Paul Moritz is the guy who invented the phrase, eat your own dog food. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the rumor. Does VMware eat their own dog food?
Absolutely.
Sort of stuff? And is that, like, everyone listening to this, can they go out there and find their local VMware employee, their local VMware SE? Will they be able to show them Horizon, show them mobile, Horizon Mobile?
So
show
right
them?
Now, they this is what we're dog fooding. On the server side, we're 98% virtualized, so that's done. Yeah. On the end user computing
everything
side.
Except for your email servers, apparently, right?
I think there's Oracle that is still there. So there is, on the end user computing side, we have 3,000 people using the virtual desktop. Everybody's using Horizon now for the SaaS provisioning, and then as we do more things, it will come in. Fusion, you know, everybody has a Mac, most people have a Mac, use Fusion. And then from Horizon Mobile, we're doing internal betas, so few of us have it, and we're scaling up. We need, for that to come together, we need to bring three people.
Because it's the hardware vendors, too.
There's
right?
the other vendors, there is the carriers, and us, and users, so yeah. Stay tuned there for more news from us.
All right, well, Vittorio, I know that you're busy today, but I really appreciate taking the time to talk to us.
And I always love to interact with you guys, because you guys, they keep it real.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, see you.
All right, so Warren Ponders actually just popped up too, and we're going to talk to him more in depth about PC over IP and At Blast and some of these kinds of things. So keep on sending your questions to us, we'll hit it. So Warren, thank you for joining us today.
What's going on, Brian and Gabe? How you guys doing?
Good. So hey, so tell us about your role at VMware. First of all, we're kind of you're the PC over IP guy. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, sure. I mean, PC over IP is one of the technologies that my team works on. Primarily, I'm the director of product management for all remote user experience products through end user computing. So that includes PC over IP, all our USB remoting technologies, and obviously At Blast, which you started hearing about yesterday.
And At Blast is what I want to talk about. Let's hold off on At Blast though, because like that's gonna be a huge conversation. Let me ask you some of these more like mechanical questions around PC over IP. Because PC over IP 3.8 that comes out with Vue 5 has 75% bandwidth improvements. There's multimedia stuff. There's all sorts of stuff. So just talk through some of that.
Sure. So basically, there's up to 75% bandwidth improvement with VMware Vue 5 and PC over IP. We made three major changes. The first change was to the lossless codec for handling clear type fonts and rich type fonts, which historically have been bandwidth intensive across
because every pixel
all
is like
protocols.
A different shaded color.
Dithered so it's down, right.
Absolutely. So we made improvements there. We also made changes to allow customers that don't want a fully lossless experience to disable the build the lossless capability of PC over IP. It's always been a build the lossless protocol and on by default. Now users can choose, do I need lossless or do I not need lossless?
So at that point, is it just build to whatever threshold you set?
Well, it will build to the perceptually lossless state, which is always the first state that PC over IP always delivers.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you can turn off the build to lossless.
It just builds to perceptually lossless.
So it's like JPEG lossless.
It doesn't build to actual lossless. Yeah. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely. It just doesn't take it to that next step, which is building it in the background to a fully lossless
right,
experience.
Right, okay.
And do you get that across the build to lossless you have on the hardware clients and everything too, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. When you disable build to lossless, you get the additional bandwidth saving benefit across all clients.
Because that's all just telling the host sender to not send as much data. The client doesn't care.
Absolutely, 100%.
We noticed yesterday playing with a demo at the Teradici booth, there was something, a medical app where you could spin around a heart or something to that effect. And as Brian touched the heart and moved it, it didn't build to lossless until he removed his finger.
Correct.
Is that something new? I guess we've only played with it in kind of an office app setting. So maybe we just wouldn't have encountered that kind of behavior before, but it was weird that you had to remove your finger first. I imagine that saves a lot of bandwidth, but maybe that's always been there and we just didn't know it.
Well, it does, right? I mean, you move the image and it changes on the region of the screen, and then anything that's changed around it, you have to update those pixels, right?
Well, but it was, as long as his finger was on the object he was moving. Yeah, it was a touch screen. So if he put his finger on it and moved it but did not remove his finger, it would not build to lossless.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Has that always been like that?
It's always been that way.
Okay. Does it, so it knows that there's that area of the screen is being interacted with? Is
correct.
That, okay.
Yep.
Because I guess it's like holding the mouse button down, so
right.
It knows that, like, we're going to do something.
Yeah.
So the build to lossless, the changes there, you said there's three major...
Yeah, the last one is client-side caching.
Wait, I missed one. So build to lossless was one. What was the second one?
Build to lossless, the changes to the lossless codec.
Okay, for, like, the clear type.
For the clear type text and rich type fonts. And then the third one is the implementation of client-side caching. So we now are implementing client-side caching where we're caching desktop imaging and pixel composition of the desktop. So, you know, things that don't persistently change, like the taskbar, the Windows button, application frames, all that stuff is now persistently cached and indexed on the client. And we can present that back to the user locally rather than retransmitting pixels back across the network.
Now, I seem to recall a certain Vancouver-based company partnered with a certain Palo Alto-based company telling me that, you know, having everything host-side rendered and sending down full screens was the way to go, and you didn't want stuff on your client and all that sort of thing. And now it seems like you've come around a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a blend. I mean, we've never sent full screens down. We've always sent pixels down. Mm-hmm. So now we're just indexing the composition. There's definitely value in taking advantage of that to lower bandwidth. It's no different than what browsers do. We're still sending pixels down. That hasn't changed. We're just trying to pick the things that we can pick as efficiently as possible to prevent retransmission and lower bandwidth. Now, so it's still rendering on the host side.
Can the zero clients do that?
Yeah, so the first release is not going to support zero clients. Teradici's already working on updates and improvements, though, so that zero clients can participate and take advantage of that as well.
So the zero client is not so zero. I guess it's still zero for management, right? But it's not...
It still is zero. Zero management, right? Even if you power off the device, everything's wiped and blown away. It's all stored in memory. This isn't something that's
okay,
persistent.
Okay, it's not like a bitmap cache like Citrix
exactly.
uses on the disk. It's
exactly.
actually just a memory thing.
Everything's done real-time in memory. The second you get disconnected, everything's blown away. The second you power off, nothing exists anymore in cache.
So since PC over IP always only transmitted bits, that meant that, like, if you had the, like, Word open, only the actual changing pixels were coming down. Would this be more like if you, like, Alt-Tab to something and then Alt-Tab back, like a lot of the menu structure and that kind of stuff would already be cached on the client, so it wouldn't have to retransmit that down?
Correct, 100%. So basically, as you know, we break the desktop composition down, you know, into a very fine, granular level. And as things are happening and as things are being, pixels are being delivered down to the client endpoint, we're using both sides of the knowledge of the breakdown of the desktop composition to intelligently cache certain portions of it down locally just to prevent that retransmission, like you said.
Now, wasn't there some kind of new feature for, like, out-of-band multimedia or something like that? Is that a PC over IP thing? Or?
Yeah, so one really exciting thing that we've released is actually unified communications integration. Basically, essentially what we've done is we've created a set of APIs that we can give to unified communication partners that allow them to hook their unified communication applications or soft phones using these APIs and essentially become view session aware. So when they detect whether or not a user is connecting from a virtual desktop or connecting to a virtual desktop from a thin client device, what it allows them to do is move the media processing for voice and video down to the client endpoint. And this separates it from the virtual desktop.
Now, you said from a thin client device, not a zero client device.
Correct. So Teradici's working with the same UC partners that we're working with.
Which is whom?
So right now we're working with Mitel and Avaya specifically. We also have a few other unified communications partners that we're working with as well that we'll announce here in the near future.
This feature is there today? But today would be like if you had a Windows client, for example, right?
And correct. So the APIs are today currently supported on Windows and Linux. So the client's endpoints that it will end up showing up on will depend upon the UC partner. So if a UC partner selects to have their media processing and media engine work with Linux or Windows or a Mac client, All of our stuff will be compatible with it, with that as well.
All right, so Christian, just give us a 5 minute, say we got 5 minutes left with you. So let's jump into App Blast. Talk about that.
So App Blast is pretty exciting, right? So this is essentially a end-user focused technology that we've been working on in the labs. It's all based around HTML5 standards, which essentially allows users to seamlessly, in a universal way, access applications from any back-end system using any HTML-enabled device.
So are these the same concepts that the other HTML5 clients are using, like WebSockets and Canvas and JavaScript?
Correct. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, is it fair to say this is like an HTML5 view client, or is that not the right characterization?
So the technology could actually, it will actually add benefits to lots of different end-user computing products. It could be a web client for Vue. It will have connection and ties to Horizon. But primarily what it focuses on and what its goal is to really help end-users seamlessly access applications from any device that they have. Mm-hmm. It's not limited by Windows. It can work with Windows, Linux, or Mac.
You mean for clients or for what it's connecting to?
Whatever it's connected to. It's not limited to physical machines, virtual machines, or even terminal services is not completely out of the picture today.
Wait. You're saying you can connect it to a remote physical machine, terminal server, Mac, Linux, whatever?
You could connect to any remote physical virtual machine. The technology as it exists right now today is not limited by any of those things.
That is so the demo that was shown in the keynote yesterday showed just Excel.
Correct.
How
you
is that
like
being?
You mean like Excel in a seamless window
a seamless
with no desktop,
right.
No menus, or no window Chrome around it?
Right. How? So how did you do that? Is it isolating it the same way that a published application would do that over on the other side? But now you also say that it works with Mac and Linux and anything else running in a VM, so this is complicated stuff.
Well, yeah, but so, you know, we do a lot of things with graphics, right? Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to capture pixels at a graphical layer, and,
sure.
And once you go below the application, there's a lot of things that you can actually do. You could make close ties to published applications or seamless windows, but because we're supporting multiple platforms, there are some unique techniques that we're having to do to get at a different layer to be able to provide just the individual application.
So even at a layer beneath Windows graphics then, at the hypervisor level, right?
That's where you can
identify a window still?
It's not, again, it's not limited to virtualization. It will actually work today on physical or virtual. So it's not tied to the hypervisor or virtualization at all right now today.
Did you guys build this technology, or is there anything you licensed from anyone
We did.
Else?
We've actually been building this technology completely in-house over the last several months. For quite some time, we've been working on it in our labs, and we're starting to transition it out of the labs and start to talk to end users and potential customers and the community about it so they can help us, you know, define where we should take the technology and what we should do with it.
So is this, to be clear, this is not really PCRIP, it's not RDP, it is its own thing, right?
It's completely, you know, because it's completely based on HTML5 web standards, there are no direct ties to PCRIP or RDP or any other remoting technology. It complements PCRIP with VMware Vue.
But so there's no translation or re-encoding going on like there is with Aircom's solution?
Yeah,
or
there's Citrix's absolutely no transcoding. It's its own standalone rendering engine.
Okay.
It can actually integrate with Vue, and it will complement, you know, Vue with PCRIP for doing full desktops, but we really are emphasized and focused on really universal application delivery across devices and across backends.
That's perfect, because it ties into Horizon that way, and that's really critical for Horizon for Horizon adoption.
Absolutely.
Because the single app publishing, the seamless app publishing, mm-hmm. which VMware's been missing for the past, well, forever.
So what's the timeline for this look like? So I'm assuming what we saw is all just kind of VMware Labs kind of stuff. I mean, is it looking to be a feature of something or a standalone product or part of Horizon, or, you know, how is that going to work in the future?
Yeah, like I said, we're still, you know, sorting out exactly all the places where we're going to tie it in and hook it in. There's mm-hmm. there's natural alignment with VMware Vue. There's natural alignment with Horizon. But again, what's a little bit different is we're really focusing on you as a user. What are the challenges that you're facing as you use more and more devices and you access things from more and more heterogeneous backends? So we're actually working really closely with users and going to reach out to the community to provide more early access so that we can actually find out from users where they want us to take the technology. So naturally, it will dovetail into existing Vue products, but we're really trying to solve end-user-facing problems first and let that be the foundation of what we build from.
And so if I'm an IT pro, and you know I'm like VMware View admin, Citrix admin, dealing with desktops, Windows 7, all that kind of stuff, and I hear about App Blast and I want to play with it, what's my timeline look like? I know it's not available yet, but is there going to be like how do I get my hands on this?
Yeah, you're gonna see us over the next coming months and moving into early 2012. We're definitely going to be interacting more openly and sharing more information, putting more data out there, and starting to reach out to communities of users to start participating in App Blast.
All right. Well, I know you got to run, so I appreciate you taking the time to clear up some stuff about App Blast. Count us in, Gabe and I,
yeah,
if we wanted to test it first as soon as we can, because as I said yesterday.
Are you a user or an IT guy?
I want to test it as a user.
That's perfect.
And that was what I meant in my tweet yesterday when I said this stuff that VMware demoed and what Vittorio demoed, me as a user, I want to use this myself.
And that's what we're targeting with App Blast.
Well, nice job.
You're my target audience.
So the demos look great. I can't wait to get my hands on it. So Warren Ponder, VMware, PC over IP, end user clients, something product management. thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks,
all right.
Gabe.
All right, see ya.
So, yeah, awkward pause.
Yeah. No. So we were talking before about Zen Desktop, and it is interesting because, and I can't remember whether we talked about this yesterday, but I mean, there's definitely a difference we're seeing between Citrix and VMware, where I feel like, and Vittorio even sort of alluded to this, for delivering the Microsoft Windows desktop
right.
today, Citrix absolutely has the leg up over VMware.
Sure.
I mean, Zen Desktop as a product today is a better product than VMware View.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, when you look at, though, the future, this whole windowless world or like moving post-PC world or whatever, it's interesting because obviously this world is a couple of years away, but it seems like what we've seen from VMware, like they fucking nailed it.
Yeah. You know, so last year and I think the year before even, VMware was talking about the next evolution, the windowless world. They didn't call it that, but they made it seem like it was happening right now, and you were a loser if you weren't on board this train. This year, they're more I don't know if it's open or willing or something, but we're talking about bridging the gap now. They realized that, and maybe they always did, but now it's not all of a sudden everybody's just going to switch over to windowless. There needs to be that transition piece, and that's Horizon and App Blast. And I mean, like I said yesterday, I just come away from this thinking, wow, these guys really have their shit together.
Yeah, and but the question is, so what's going to happen in this next, you know, 2-3 years? And so, like, because we're not in the windowless world right now, you know, and so if we're not in the windowless world right now, so Citrix has the better product for the Windows world, and so can people? I mean, are they going to buy Citrix Zen Desktop and use Zen Desktop now? And start like
they can.
They're gonna, right, but my point is, are they going to be so entrenched in Citrix because Citrix does a better job of delivering the Windows desktop that when we get to the post PC world in 3 or 4 years, is it too late for VMware?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that we've got Horizon supports Zen App, okay, and I would imagine that Zen Desktop is in that mix somewhere too, maybe somehow with App Blast involved or something like that. But even if you are invested in Citrix right now and you're all hardcore Windows, if you decide in 3 or 4 years to bridge that and move into the windowless world, Horizon's still there and works with what you have. And you can cut over that way, and it's still not like pulling the rug out from underneath you.
I guess we got to see what VMware support is for Zen App, because I forgot that they actually said they were going to be supporting Zen App and Zen Desktop with Horizon.
Well, they said Zen App for sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about
Zen Desktop. Yeah. They'll never support that.
And the new voice you hear, by the way, is Bridget Botella.
Yep.
So
hey,
thanks for joining us today, Bridget.
Yeah.
Bridget is one of our fellow editors at Tech Targets, and she writes primarily for Search Virtual Desktop.
Yeah, and this morning I was actually talking to some guys about whether they use Vue or not, some attendees. And they both said they were Citrix users. You know, they're here for the server side stuff, and
I'm sure they run vSphere as the hypervisor for it.
And run Zen App, and they can run Zen Desktop on top of vSphere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Vue's just kind of behind the ball here, and they're doing some cool stuff with like the App Blast and the Horizon stuff. But if it works with Zen App, they're not going to abandon their Citrix stuff.
Well, but VMware at this point just wants to get people away from Windows. I mean, that's the whole point of Horizon and in all of this other stuff that they're doing, where they're actually running databases right on ESX or right on vSphere. So their idea is to get rid of Windows, and so they'll give anybody access to the bridge to get them to the other side.
Yeah, well, so at the same time, they're supporting Windows app. They're letting people thin app Windows apps and send them to Horizon. And
because they're smart enough not to ignore it.
Right. They have to.
And I guess we're talking so much about, you know, if you're going to adopt a windowless idea, then you have to go with VMware. And who knows, you know, Citrix has Cloud Bridge or Open Cloud Bridge Gateway. That's what it was. And Cloud Bridge, actually, yeah. If you want to connect to other clouds. But so Citrix has their own solutions. They're more complicated. And maybe younger, I guess, as far as or more green as the technology goes, but they're definitely playing. They acknowledge this kind of trend as well. So I think that, you know, we shouldn't count them out.
Well, certainly not. I mean, look, Citrix is doing over $1 billion
right
in Zen Desktop Zen App revenue right now. VMware does not disclose its Vue revenue and Horizon revenue. Yeah. It's probably like, you know, a couple million bucks, I don't know. I mean, VMware, now granted, VMware is a $2.6 billion company.
Yeah, they don't need to, yeah.
Right, but the point is that in terms of desktop delivery, virtual desktop delivery, Citrix is just absolutely dominating VMware today.
Well, I think that Vue for VMware, after the show, I feel like Vue for VMware is just a way for them to get these Windows people like into the VMware kimono.
Right, which is a good move.
It is. But Citrix, yeah, hands down, is going to be, if you're all about the Windows desktop, you're just going to have to go in.
And that's like I said, the problem is if I'm an IT pro who's a desktop admin and I'm dealing with my everything today, I don't know if I'm jumping on that Vue bandwagon.
Well, I interviewed Raj Malampati this morning. He's the desktop guy, and I said that.
It's
you know,
Citrix.
A lot of people, he's VMware's, yeah. And, you know, I said people use Citrix, and why would they want to use Vue? And he said their competitive advantage, and they readily admit this, is that it integrates with vSphere, and their customers use vSphere, so it's easy for them to just say, hey, we'll deploy Vue. And by the way, they're basically giving this stuff away. I mean,
yeah.
I've written about this, and I had a contact of mine send me a pricing sheet of Vue 5 that was like, you know, if you're a vSphere customer, you're going to get this stuff for a really, really good deal.
Oh, I know. I have friends that work for, you know, companies and have real jobs and not like us. They didn't buy their Vue licenses. If they signed on and bought an enterprise agreement for vSphere or whatever, they got their Vue licenses.
Yeah,
so we're always really quick to say, you know, Vue licenses sold is a lot different than Vue licenses deployed. We're doing the same for Citrix too, because it's not like they're, you know, getting full price for all these things either.
Right. Let's come back to Citrix for a sec, because one of the things I think that was key, we were talking about, you know, Gabe, you kind of said, like, is Citrix dead in the this whole post-PC era? And then we're talking about Cloud Gateway and that kind of stuff. And obviously, you know, we can't count out, as you said also, anyone to be dead in 3 years to a market that's not even here yet.
Right.
But I do think that Citrix has the right components. So the Cloud Gateway stuff is the right stuff. Citrix talks about Zen Vault. Citrix has talked about not trying to build their own data management like what VMware is doing, but rather to integrate with other ones. In fact, they could even integrate with the Octopus stuff that,
sure.
that VMware does. Where VMware has outdone Citrix so far, and again, we're talking about a market that doesn't even exist yet, is on the marketing side of things and sort of integrating everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Because the problem is that these
as I look around,
as you look around 20,000 push show, the thing is, Citrix has the Zen Desktop and Zen App, and that's sort of what desktop admins are familiar with. But then all the Cloud Gateway and extending into the SaaS stuff is like kind of branded as NetScaler, which NetScaler is like a networking thing and
right.
not things that...
And that's the age-old thing that we've been fighting ever since Citrix bought Net6, and now we have to, you know, it's great, I really want this access gateway, but I have to get my network team to sign off on this thing, and so that doesn't work. And so it's the same fight that we've been fighting for a long time, and I think that that's the biggest roadblock. We've told this to a few Citrix people this week and actually in the past too, that I think is the biggest thing for Cloud Gateway right now, is that it's going to slow adoption because you got to get the network guys on board.
But
Horizon, you just buy it, you subscribe
well,
to it.
Well, and that's it, because I still don't believe that people are going to jump on board to this VMware desktop virtualization bandwagon until we get a little bit further away from Windows. Because like I said, I know I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, but IT pros, desktop admins, they just care about Windows 7. Getting to Windows 7, maybe if they're really advanced, they're doing some like app virtualization or some like user workspace virtualization. But for the most part, they're like, you know what, man? I got 2,000 Windows XP desktops. That shit expires in 2014, and I am fired if I don't fix that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the persona management piece doesn't help people migrate from XP to Windows 7 in Vue, which is like, well, isn't that what people are using
right.
this stuff for?
Well, and they don't want to have to change all their apps and all that stuff as well all at the same time. I mean, there's just so much that has to be done to get to where this future vision is. So it's one step at a time.
My prediction is that at VMworld 2012, we're going to see this. It's going to be the same stuff.
We'll have the same conversation.
Yeah, and like, you know, Citrix will be farther in their vision, VMware will be farther in their vision, but Citrix will still be ahead in Windows, and we're still going to be dealing with Windows. Hey, so let's move on a little bit. There's a couple folks that we've been talking to, just walking around the floor and seeing different things. I'm curious, what have you seen? And Bridget, by the way, we just grabbed you to stick you on here, so I don't know if you have anywhere to be, but feel free to.
No, I'm good.
You had hurricane-related travel issues.
I know. I just got in last night, so I watched this keynote yesterday online, and I've been getting briefing this morning. But
have you met any vendors here that were interesting? I mean, you talked about talking to a few customers. Have you been here long enough yet to see anything interesting?
VMware has had me tied up with briefings about their stuff. I did some pre-briefings. There's a lot of updates, product updates to go with Vue 5. Zangate's got their VDI management dashboard is actually really cool. It manages all the storage and networking and all the stuff on the back end, and it works for Zen Desktop too.
I wonder if they've updated that since we had them on the Muppet Geek Week, or the Muppet, the Muppet Brian Madden TV.
That's what we did with the puppets.
Was an update this week for V5 and PC over IP improvements.
I see.
By the way, what did you think of the PC over IP WAN improvements? They say it's 75% better, but...
They say up to...
Sorry. I know.
Yeah,
I know.
The 75%, to get there, you have to turn off the build to lossless.
Yeah.
So, that's a big thing, and it might not be that big of a deal. We actually haven't gone to get the video demo of that yet. That's one of the next things that we're going to go do. So, I'm optimistic, but I think 75% is not.
No, but that's fine. Talking about bandwidth consumption and remoting protocols is like talking about cost savings in IT. You make the numbers show whatever you want. Yeah. There's a sliding scale between user experience and bandwidth improvements.
Right.
And if I want to deliver a desktop, I can do that and over a certain amount of bandwidth, and like it's. So what do they say? Like, because technically it's a worse user experience because it's lossy, even though the users might not notice. It's just a lot of funny numbers. Mm. What was interesting to me, I thought, was that VMware made a big deal, last time Vue came out, with how like it's now WAN friendly and all this kind of stuff. And Citrix is saying, is that really true? And we're all getting into like arguments about it. And then VMware comes out and says, now it's WAN friendly. And we're like,
that's what I said. I thought it was last time. There's room for 75% better improvement.
But, one of the things, Warren Ponder, when he was just on, one of the things I did not ask him, but I have had the conversation with him about before, is I really kind of feel like PC over IP and HGX, as I've said before, they're both fine.
Yeah.
I don't think that anyone's buying one product or the other
because of the use case. Yeah, there's still the use case issue where one might work better than the other in a specific use case, but there really isn't... there's nothing we can't say. Oh man, you just have to use HDX. Go there. Or you have to use PC over IP. It just doesn't. That kind of problem doesn't exist. So it's the same importance of an issue as flash redirection at this point. Yeah.
So Gabe, what have you seen on the floor? You've been walking around here yesterday. Anything stand out in your mind?
With Justin and I have been walking around shooting videos and stuff. We went and saw the Teradici Apex 2800 card. This is the ability to offload the processing of the protocol off to a separate hardware card, and that frees up processor resources on the host.
I like that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say what I love about this thing: you plug it in. There's no configuration. You just plug it in.
And there's two lights on it. One light shows that it's on, and the other light shows that it's working.
What's amazing about it is, it supports 300 megapixels per second. So, because people are asking like how many screens it can support or how many users.
There actually is a limit to how many screens it can support, and I feel like it's
64, but 64. Is that a hard limit, or is that just a...
I think that's at a certain resolution, you can divide that out to get 300 megapixels.
The point is, but it just inserts itself into the rendering pipeline. You don't have to say, this user gets the processing card, this user doesn't. You don't have to worry about, because that's the problem in the old stuff.
If you tick a box. You do have to tick a box that says,
to turn it on.
For the VM, you have to turn it on. But even at that point, it doesn't use the offload card unless it needs it.
Well,
so there's a threshold that's configured.
And the thing is, it's basically pumping everything through this card. So it doesn't... The point is, it's not like with RemoteFX where you say, this user is going to use YouTube, so you need RemoteFX, and you don't. And then you go to YouTube, and then you fuck everyone else. So this just works for everyone across the board. I also love it. It takes 15 watts. The only reason that the card has a heat sink on it is so they have a place to laser engrave their logo.
So interesting, we were talking to Stuart Robinson over there, and he has said that he's working on a model. I know you hate these things, but there's a very real difference now. If you're putting all of this graphics processing off onto a processor that only runs at 15 watts, that's a significant power savings over what an Nehalem processor or a newer Intel processor would actually do.
Oh yeah, and look at remote effects.
Who knows? Because that might consume 100 watts, over the time.
And these remote effects require these big GPU cards, mm-hmm. and they're like double wides because they have the fans built in.
Right.
And this is awesome. And this is one of my favorite products.
Yeah.
Of the show for sure has been that Apex card. It's like list price $1,950.
Yep.
And it's sold through the channel. And EVGA is one of their delivery partners also, so you can probably buy on Amazon for all we know.
Yeah, really.
So I don't know. So what else? So you like that? Anything else you saw out there?
I went to Virtual Computer this morning just to see what Next Top 4 looks like, and it's in release candidate mode right now, so it's not quite out. I asked when it would be, and they said their customers tell them when to release it.
Well,
so.
It's interesting too. It's also it's out in that customers can download it. You can go have this today.
Right.
But it doesn't count
recommended.
As
yeah.
final until they like put the final gold seal on it.
And so what's interesting here is that now they have this diskless workstation mode. So where they kept mentioning Lenovo, and I don't know if it's exclusive with a Lenovo solution.
Well, Lenovo goes out and sells Virtual Computer built in.
Okay, so this probably works with other things, but they. Yeah. Kept mentioning
well,
Lenovo.
This is technology that they licensed from IBM, now obviously IBM and Lenovo are not together, but I don't know if
there's a relationship there though.
I don't know, but anyway, go on. You're explaining.
Oh well, this is during this video with them. I likened what's happening to provisioning server where the image is actually streamed down or sent down as needed from. The storage system via iSCSI to a diskless workstation. And so the bits, they're, like I said, just streamed as needed, but then when that machine turns off, they go back, and that means that any machine you log into will receive that image. So it doesn't reside locally, it resides in the data center.
Yeah, and it is truly mounting it via iSCSI, so it's not much like provisioning service, you say.
Much like, but I got the reaction like, no, like, conceptually, it's the same, but it's not. And I think that's just kind of a marketing thing where,
well,
I mean, because to me, this sounds exactly
like.
It is
the same, but it's the same thing. But the thing is, what's awesome is that, and like provisioning server, you can have one image that is shared by multiple users, or each user can have his mm-hmm. or her own image. What's awesome about this, though, is it still has the next top, the hypervisor, on their client device. So now, the previous versions of Virtual Computer, it was a client hypervisor, your disk image was on your laptop. Mm-hmm. This is basically, or your disk image was on your
USB
your machine,
yeah. Yeah,
and now you can have it. So it's the virtual. It's you got a desktop, a lab, or whatever. You don't have to pre-copy, install, push that mm-hmm. out. You can just mount it across the wire. But what's awesome is since it's all Nextop clients on either side, you have the exact same disk image.
Right.
Whether you've got the client hypervisor on a laptop and you're taking it offline, or whether you're mounting it across the wire in a LAN environment, it's the same disk image. I don't mean
and
the
it
disk
whitewashes the hardware here too, because it doesn't
because
matter
it's
because it's already Nextop.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So and it does commingle. You can have a local image, a local operating system, VM on there, as well as using the diskless method. Last version, Nextop 3.1, they introduced the ability to just have a machine auto-launch and connect, so a user doesn't even have to know that they're doing this. They just turn their box on and it connects. Version 4 has single sign-on capabilities, so now they log into their Nextop, and then that automatically signs them into their desktop as well.
And that's the thing, man. With Virtual Computer and this Nextop 4, like, that's another product that I'm just absolutely really impressed with, mm-hmm. because we had Simon Crosby on the show last week talking about how difficult client hypervisors are. We had
Brian Gamage on yesterday saying how users don't want to know that there's a client hypervisor or something in between.
And
they just did that.
And here's Virtual Computer doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had Brian Gamage and Simon Crosby talking about how hard and users don't care, and they're doing it.
Yeah.
Ignore the man behind the curtain who's doing it.
And the thing is, because as Gabe, you were saying, the users don't even know that they are running a client hypervisor. Which is perfect. We don't want them to know.
And now they've even made the changes in Next.4 where you have they give the user visibility down to the hypervisor level to do the configuration of power management and network settings and things like that. And they made it look like Windows. It doesn't look like crappy X Windows or Linux or whatever the hell's actually running underneath this thing. It looks like Windows. Yeah. It looks familiar to the user, and they have the control that they're used to having if Windows was installed natively.
They are ripe for acquisition, those guys. I mean, because VMware is not working on the Type 1 client hypervisor anymore at all.
Yeah. I mean, VMware wouldn't buy them because they run Xen. But
yeah.
But VMware doesn't believe in Windows.
Clearly.
They're still a privately owned company, virtual computer, right?
Yeah. Who buys them?
I don't know.
Microsoft?
Microsoft, maybe.
And then they could have a way to run management.
You know who buys them? HP or, I guess HP's leaving the market. Dell?
Yeah.
So, actually, you're right. A security company. So, Symantec.
Yeah.
They're really tight with Intel, and Intel bought
McAfee.
Yeah.
A client hypervisor company.
Well, they bought Neoclis.
Yeah.
But they bought. But Neoclis was kind of out of business. They just bought them.
I know. What happened? They just kind of ripped
them
apart.
I think they bought patents.
Yeah. And staff.
Yeah. And they bought some very smart people to help them. Because Intel's now using those people to sort of make blueprints for how other ISVs can write software, run multiple VMs and stuff. But Intel bought McAfee also.
Yeah.
And so I could see the Intel McAfee combination grabbing a virtual computer, a Lenovo, a Dell.
And then you get local device out of band management. So Big Fix, maybe that's kind
they're
of a thing.
They're bought by
IBM. Right. Yeah. So maybe IBM maybe even could have something to do with that. Just because of that out of band management. So assuming that PCs are still going to be the main mechanism of delivering Windows for the next 5, 6, 7, whatever years, that kind of thing could be pretty valuable to them.
But you're right, Gabe. The key points you made, they've got single sign-on that hide the fact that VMs are running.
Mm-hmm.
You can see there's a system tray icon to control the network and the power states and the Wi-Fi and connect you to all of that kind of stuff.
And you could do all that before in Windows, but that was irrelevant because the hypervisor was taking over.
Now it looks like normal Windows. Like I said, if I give this thing to my mom, she doesn't know that she's running in a hypervisor, which is perfect. So virtual computer, one of my favorite vendors here, they absolutely nailed it.
So Nutanix?
They pronounce
You're the only one that's talked to them.
They pronounce it Nutanix,
okay.
Which is close to my heart.
Tomato.
I'm from Ohio, so that sounds like the way that...
Sounds like Pennsylvania kind of thing.
So this is... They're
next on my list, too, this afternoon to go talk to. You've talked to them before.
Yeah, Nutanix, when I met them... what was that? Two, 3 weeks ago. I think I said I have a new crush on this company. And did we talk about them? We did talk.
I don't know them. What do they
about
do?
Them on the show? So just as a refresher, they're a new company. Just came out of stealth mode about 2 weeks ago, selling product. They sell a hardware appliance. It's like a blade server, but it has a Fusion I/O and storage built in, and so it's for high intense workloads like desktops. And then you can scale these things. When you plug them in together, they create kind of like a storage grid across all the individual nodes. So the idea with it is it gives you the IOPS performance of like a SAN, but a SAN is A, very expensive, and B, a big investment. So if you want to start with like 100 virtual desktops and then go to 150, then 200, then 300. You know, your SAN's gonna cost you $200,000, and unless you're putting like 1,000 users on it, it doesn't make sense. So their environment starts with the small 3 nodes and can scale to, they don't know how high, they've tested to 50, and these are 50, 12 core, 192 gigs. So like,
and since they're so new, they may only have 50.
Yeah, but the thing is, what's nice about it though is, so Fusion I/O is very, very fast, right? That can make any, look at V3, you can put Fusion I/O on HP or whatever. But with Fusion I/O and very fast local storage, you're only local storage. So you don't get all the like vCenter, live migration, booting any VM on any host. To do that, you need a SAN. So Nutanix basically gives you the benefits of the SAN, of the ability to do live migration, moving VMs around, but at the cost of local storage.
Because VMware mentioned yesterday in the keynote that there's some additions to vSphere that I know I'm not going to get this right because, we don't pay that much attention to vSphere in the storage, but there's almost a grid architecture that reminded me or resembled IntelliCache a bit, where there's storage nodes and local storage can be replicated across the board so that there is some sort of, you don't need a SAN for very small environments.
Right.
This does that, but that VMware method was for very small implementations.
Well,
this sounds like a scalable version of that plus IntelliCache kind
the
of thing.
Difference, but look, the IntelliCache and this VMware storage, I forget what they call it, the VSA or something, but that's still dealing with local storage. So it's basically having like your master copies back on a network of file share, so very cheap, and then streaming it down, memory caching, sharing between multiple users, but that's all local. So when you're local, that VM is locked to that machine. You can power it off and power it on somewhere else, but you're not live migrating, you're not, a lot of these capabilities you're not having. So
well, those abilities were there in the VSA, the VMware one. You could live migrate. That was the key to that, was it gave you that functionality without having a SAN.
Okay, so we should look into that, because I know that what they are off, what they have for what was originally in Vue, which was called like that CBRC, content-based read cache.
Yeah, this is platform level. They didn't even mention it in the context of Vue.
Okay, so we'll have to do some homework and come back to that.
I talked to a Vue 5 user who was saying that the VSA has changed his life, basically, because now he has all this storage that's not just sitting there. He can, it's way more efficient.
Really?
Yeah.
So Nutanix, the interesting thing about them is that they're one of these big data companies. So they, their DNA is from like some of the Oracle High Performance Database. A bunch of guys who designed the Google file system are there. And so these massive distributed file systems that run Facebook and Twitter and Google and these kinds of things is the DNA of Nutanix. And the idea is they basically take the compute and push it out towards the data tier and then make that so it's scalable and replicatable. Mm. So that's another one of my favorites here.
Jack's here now. We're going to take Jack over to Nutanix here this afternoon and go spend some time with
him. Did we talk about Jack before?
I don't know if we have talked about Jack. Hey, Jack works for us now.
So a lot of you know Jack.
For him, you know Jack.
you know Jack. So Jack works for us now. And he's the latest sort of editor for BrianMadden.com and Search Virtual Desktop. And he'll be now working with Gabe and
really, this
Bridget
just helps kind of spread the load out over more people. So yeah. Over more backs.
Jack's the guy who wrote that V3 article last
yeah.
week.
We're going to go see them too.
Did you see V3 yet? Jack, do you visit? Jack's sitting over there in the corner with the headphones on. He said he's not visited V3 yet, so good luck with that. a couple of other interesting things. I mean, sort of general buzz type stuff. You know, I gave my session yesterday, as we talked about. I guess I won't plug it for today because anyone listening here is not.
Hey, I got a question. I need to ask you about something.
Yeah.
And I want to read it to you.
All right. Oh, did you write it here?
No, it's right here. Oh. We're playing with a laptop here, so I want to read you this, and I want to know your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
So this is from an article on VentureBeat.com. Brian Madden, an industry expert and corporate computing blogger, estimates that VDI reduces hardware costs by 32%, but it increases software costs by 64%, negating any gains. He says that Mocha 5 cuts the total cost of owning a desktop by 45%
wow.
and cuts help desk costs by 60% while requiring 90% less infrastructure than VDI.
Look,
60% of the time, you're right 100% of the time.
Yeah, someone's an asshole because I never said that. So I don't know who I'm pissed off at. I don't know if I'm pissed off at VentureBeat or this guy Dean Takahashi who wrote this, or Dale Fuller, whose full-size photograph is higher and larger than the entire article of Mocha 5 or Mocha 5, but I did not fucking say that. And so I posted in the comments that
anybody
I did not.
Anybody that knows you would know.
Actually, let me refresh this page now and see what it's like. And actually, I'll pop this into the chat room. Right
but
now
I think
so
that's
you
how you know
it.
You've made it, right? Where it's not even that you were misquoted. They just made shit up.
They just made that up. And let's see if it's still there. And let's see about my comments. My comment is still there too. Because the thing is, yeah, like first of all, I don't agree with that data about how much it saves. And second of all, I don't agree in quantifying any data about cost savings. Because I did that whole session at Synergy
on
like
matters on
how to lie with cost models. I would never fucking say that. Like, goddamn it, guys, come on.
He's lying about your quote in using some statistical modeling.
maybe that's the technique.
Yeah.
So we only had 11 techniques on how to lie with cost models. Technique number 12. is find some guy who's like has a reputation, you know, like the people would follow, and just make up a quote and attribute
statistical
to him.
Statistical quote modeling.
And thank
you. You need to add that now to the presentation. And
thank you, Google News Alerts, for notifying me that, because of course they didn't tell
Maybe
me about
there's
this.
Another Brian Madden that's a corporate
blogger. It links back to BrianMadden.com.
BrianMadden.
Wow, that's it.
But here's the thing, though. It links back to my bio on BrianMadden.com, it doesn't link back to the actual article where I supposedly said this
that.
Thing. So that's crazy. The other crazy thing is, like, in my identity crisis of today, is Did you see this thing out with Wise and PanoLogic?
Well, yeah, I've seen some emails bounce around. We haven't been checking that much. But apparently, yeah, so Pano had this this display at Bryform that was comparing one feature to another, and so tried to decide whether this is a thin client or a zero client or a physical machine, that kind of thing. Apparently, Wise didn't like that, or yes. Pano thinks Wise
no,
didn't like that.
No, here's the thing. Look, I don't know who's a bigger jackass here either, but, like, so Pano puts out a press release. Like, are you kidding me? Like, a press release. Here, look at this thing. And it says, here, let me post this in the show thing. So here's their...
We're gonna put it in the chat room.
Their
yeah.
press release. And they say, two out of three users prefer PanoLogic user experience to double-blind performance
test. Sounds like a quote from Brian.
First of all, it's not a double-blind performance test. A double-blind test means that
they have no idea.
They didn't know which was which, and they also didn't know the test was happening.
Yeah.
This was saying, we got two machines side by side, which one do you like better, but you don't know which one's which. So that's a blind test, not a double-blind test. So the title right off the bat is already like way, way, way wrong. And it goes on, blah, 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 same. They did this thing at Bryform, and our attendees checked it and all that stuff. So some dude from Wise posted in his blog, this is all crap, but among the reasons he said it's crap, and I'm quoting, curiously, there's no validation of these results in the form of a confirming quote from Brian Madden, which is surprising since this comparison test was conducted during his event. I just want to point out, I don't allow anyone to quote me in press releases. That happened once.
Yeah. It was one time. It was used incorrectly.
It was Neocleus. They used it completely out of context. And then we established a new policy, which is Brian's not quoting quotes for press releases anymore.
You don't want to be related to vendors in that way anyway.
That's no, it's funny because every policy has a reason for that policy.
Right.
And that's the reason. But yeah. The thing is, and they're like, so they're saying it's not a confirming quote. So I basically said in my comment, hey, I don't put any quotes in press releases, and it sounds like this is an issue with you and Pano. Don't drag me into this. So my comment is posted, and then all of a sudden later I look today. I posted a comment
there's
earlier.
No comments. There's the, oh yeah, there it is.
And then the comment's there, and the comment's gone again. And I did have an awesome. So the comment disappeared. So I tweeted. I said like. Dear Wise, North Korea calls. They want their PR guy back. but then they said, "Oh, it was moderated," and then which is weird because like this moderation is there. It has to show up on we have to approve it. And I'm like, well, it was there before, but whatever. It's been moderated. It's been unmoderated again. So my comment is back.
So Brian's bitch session is over now, right?
And as a matter of fact, yeah, I'm at 12 o'clock on the nose right now. So bitching over. Gabe?
Day two. I'm out of here after today.
Yeah, so your kid starts preschool tomorrow.
Yeah, so I'm not going to miss that.
I'm out tomorrow too.
So. Okay, right. So
in for a day and then out, huh?
Yeah.
So that's it. So we'll have our show, I guess, next week back in San Francisco. You're back in Nebraska.
Yep.
And we'll have Brian and Gabe live next week. Thank you.
See you guys. Thanks.